Hey, this is Death Ground. How do you hire an SEO agency? Listen to the podcast.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Now, if I asked anyone who's never done something to go and do something, the reality is they're probably not going to do very well at it. Stands to reason, you've got no experience at it. Yet we all have to take that leap of faith. We have to make that judgment call and go, is this company, is this person worth spending hundreds, maybe thousands of pounds every month when I can't really quantify or know what they're doing? So you take a risk, you feel like nothing's happened, you didn't learn anything. I think that's really important, learning, so you understand what is good, what is bad. So you don't do it. And then years go by and then you end up falling behind, because the reality is there are people out there who are good. There are companies out there who are smashing it in your sector. And you're probably looking for these questions because you want that applied to your business. So I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll spend a little bit of time doing a podcast explaining what you need to understand about SEO before you go out there and recruit someone, or even some of the questions you probably want to hear back when you have a chat with them. So let's start with what is SEO broken down by. So SEO, search engine optimization, I say it's not just a blog post. It's not just someone writing some product titles and all of a sudden you're going to outperform someone else or rank better. There is a lot more to it than that. So I generally say it's made up of four things. SEO to me, or part of an SEO strategy, involves four things. That's what I look at. And what are these things? Okay, so we start with user experience. You might have heard the phrase UX. That essentially means is, what is the experience like for a customer or a visitor to your website? How quickly does the page load? How is it to find anything? What is the compunction, is that the right word? To stay on a page, dwell time. What is the likelihood that the navigation is such that they want to click onto another page, multiple page views? What is the quality of the content on there? Is it just text, or is it nice pictures? Is it little animations? Is it videos? Is it widgets that gets engagement? What is those things that there on that page that's going to make them hang around longer on the page? That's dwell time per page. What's the likelihood they're going to click onto products and buy things and convert and have a good experience and come back and search for your brand next time? So it's a brand search. So user experience is really, really vital. It's also great because when I get involved with the company or get involved with any of my own projects, one of the things I love doing is improving the user experience, which is a part of conversion rate optimization. So I'm throwing in loads of phrases here, but conversion rate optimization is essentially saying, okay, for every 100 people that visit your site, 2 people buy. Let's make that 3 people for every 100 people buys. All of a sudden, you've increased your number of sales by 50%. Is that right, 50%? Yeah, 50%. 2 to 3 is an extra 1 person. It's 50% increase. And that's amazing. So immediately I can prove myself as someone worth having involved and having on board. But more importantly is, if people come back to your site, they might tell their friends about you. So then their friends Google your brand name. Brand search is considered to be a really important indicator for strength and authority of a brand, and helps your whole site rank. I'll give an example. So in our sector where we're working in e-commerce, as soon as the lockdown happened, it meant everyone who normally went to your shops was going to go and shop online. And so some people will find you for Google Business page. But a lot of people just type your shop name in into Google. And so all of a sudden, all of these retailers who've got offline businesses saw a massive growth in the number of their online sales because their brand searches spiked literally in days. So that tells Google, oh, hang on, these companies are companies of note. People care about this. Maybe they're answering search queries well. Maybe they're answering questions well, whatever. But we certainly got a bump. All across the board, we started seeing ourselves rank for terms we've never ranked before. We were seeing loads of new customers online in areas we'd never even had a shop in. And that's because of the power of brand search. So user experience is a really important part of the search engine optimization process. Look, put it this way. If it was all about just doing one little blog and tweaking it and say, and there are phrases out there you can just write a good bit of content and you can rank really well for. If people then come to your site and the experience is so appallingly bad, or the page itself is very, very boring to read, they're going to bounce straight off your site. And that tells Google that you didn't answer the search query particularly well. And that means you're going to start falling down the rankings. So user experience, first thing. If you're looking at an agency and they're not even mentioning user experience, then consider that perhaps they may be a level below what you need. Next up, we're going to talk about technical SEO. Now, technical SEO is essentially all the things that go on in the background. So when I look at a website, I run reports on that site. I use tools such as Screaming Frog, it's a UK-based company, and they will run a massive crawl through your site. And what they're looking for are broken links. They're looking for links that aren't indexed, or links that are indexed or that don't follow, that you tell Google not to follow. They look at whether or not you've got redirect chains. That means if you're anything like me in the early days, you have a product, then you change the name of that product, and therefore you might change the URL slightly and you'll redirect it. And then a year goes by and you change it again and you change the URL, and all of a sudden you've got a redirect to a redirect to a redirect and so on. That is called a redirect chain. And ultimately what that means is it takes longer to load. Therefore, that URL is of a lower quality, page performance is lower, and you're less likely to rank. So where you may have once had a good listing somewhere with an old URL, the link value of that falls. So redirect chain is something to really think about. You've got things like broken links. So you may have had an old domain, changed it to a new domain. And next one you've got is broken links. Now, broken links essentially are where you might have had an old domain and you might have attracted some links externally around the world that were linking to that page. For some reason, the link between that old page and your new page you created isn't there anymore, and you've got a broken link. So that means you lose all the benefit of all that work you did in the past. So we have to look at things like that. We look at whether or not your site is secure. We look at whether or not your IP address is being shared with loads of other dodgy companies. We found out one of our websites has its IP address through Cloudflare, which is supposedly secure. It's being shared with a Russian bride site, casino site, a ton of streaming sites. Now, if other companies on that IP address are being penalized by Google for nefarious deeds, you can be penalized by proxy. So that's something to be considering. So technical SEO is very important, but page performance, page load, how long it takes for the actual website to be actionable, be able to use it when it loads, these are all really critical factors. And if you don't get these things right from the outset, there's no point doing a nice blog. Get the basic things done right first. And sometimes you can see results just from that. What other areas of technical SEO do we look for? Internal linking, hierarchical structure. A good website should be like a family tree where it makes sense, it follows things on. Very often you see websites with a very messy navigation bar. Things don't have any sort of separate home. Pages are all over the place. And if users can't fully understand it when they've got human intelligence behind it, it's going to be very hard for Google and Bing and other search crawlers to crawl through your site and realize what depth of content you have around specific topics. Messy website structures aren't great. There's a number of ways to fix them, and we look at that, things like breadcrumbs, we look at folders and categories, but again, these are things that if you don't really do those things and just focus on, oh, I need one blog a month, I need these products done, I need my meta titles done, and if that's what you're being pitched by an SEO company and they're not talking to you about the real technical SEO, and actually implementing it as well. There's no point telling someone who's looking for SEO advice and SEO support and saying, yep, you know, here's your report, see you later, bill you next week, and then again next month. All you do is you end up with this stack of advice that you actually have nothing to do with. So I think it's really important that when you go out there and you're looking for SEO advice, SEO support, make sure that they can also do the work. You know, you might pay a bit more money for that, or certainly they may have someone they recommend who can implement it, but there's no point getting all this data and all this advice that you don't implement. If you needed to go out there and get this advice, the chances are you probably don't actually know how to implement it. So again, you want to look for someone who actually holds your hand and someone who can actually help you apply those things. And if all they're doing is just giving you a document and they're not going to apply it, you might think, well, hang on, do you even know the depth of what those things do for my site? Have you just pulled off a basic report from somewhere, like a white label report? There's a lot of websites out there where you can just plug a URL in and it just give you a ton of things that need to be done. Now, they are useful tools as websites for people like myself to look at and go, okay, well, there's some immediate tasks to be done. But the difference is someone like yourself, you want to know what the impact that's going to have on your business, what doing it could do for you, and more importantly, you want to actually know how it's going to be done on your site, and you want to be able to keep a log of that. So that's what you look at, technical SEO. So we've done user experience, we've done technical SEO. What's next? Let's talk about off-page SEO. So off-page SEO is essentially another website or another blog or a Facebook group referencing one of your pages or your website with specific words from a relevant topic back to you. So say, for example, you sell sports shoes, okay? You sell the latest in plastic-free sports shoes. Maybe you have your own brand of plastic-free sports shoes and it's eco-friendly and you donate to charity and all that other stuff. Maybe the keyword you're trying to target for you, that particular page or that particular product is plastic, can't say it right, plastic-free sports shoes. So what you want to be finding is forums on the best sports shoes that are plastic-free, plastic-free life, eco-friendly clothing products. You want to get involved with those kind of groups, those forums. You want to find bloggers and influencers and websites that talk about those things in a relevant manner. And ultimately, you want to get your page mentioned on their site that links back to your page. So we're not talking about just having links to your homepage. If you've got a ton of different products, but you're specifically trying to target one particular page on your website, a money page or an advice page, and that page is about plastic-free sports shoes, you want to get your advice page mentioned on someone else's site with the words, "Oh, it's a great guide on plastic-free sports shoes." I don't even know if they're a thing, and they probably are a thing. And so then you've got a link from another website, hopefully of good authority, a good site, linking back to yours, using the words as the hyperlink text on the to the reader about your thing. So what they're doing is they're telling Google that, hey, here's a good guide to read about plastic-free sports shoes, so much so that I've hyperlinked the words plastic-free sports shoes. That's what a backlink is in a nutshell. Now, how important are they? Well, they vary in their importance depending on the quality of them and the competitiveness of the actual search term you're trying to rank for. But the best way to describe it is they're like a vote of confidence. I mentioned it before in another podcast. If you skim through my podcast, you can look at about backlinks. But all things being equal, if your site and another site have exactly the same content, exactly the same everything else, the one with more quality backlinks is going to be the one that ranks higher. That's kind of the basic of it in a nub. So that's off-page SEO. And you need to be working on those things. And it's all about relevant backlinks, quality backlinks. I'd much rather have one high-quality backlink from a very high-quality website that might even actually have some traffic that comes through than 1,000 $50 backlinks from Fiverr. So tempting to get them, so tempting to use them, but trust me, I've been there, I've done it, they don't work. More importantly, if they do work, you get lucky, all of a sudden you have an algorithm update and you're going to be the person going, "Why has my website suddenly lost all its traffic?" Well, it's because Google's found out what you've done and it's penalized you. So, you know, it's some people want to take a gamble and see if it does work and hope, you go, "Well, you know what, I'll take the gamble, I'll take the hit, right now I've got no traffic." But if you want to build a long-term site, I personally believe there'll be a point where Google's algorithm suddenly is able to just strip out all of the nonsense sites, and all those sites that have done things white hat quality properly will just be bumped up one morning and it'll be the best day of our lives. That's the hope anyway. Now, part four is on-page SEO, and that does relate to the kind of content you write, the quality of content. A lot of people talk about, do I need to do long content? Long content ranks. Generally, that's a causation correlation thing. Content that is comprehensive, clear, easy to read, engaging, and, well, has people that dwell on the page for long, people that click through to other pages, those are the things that tend to rank well. And more importantly, you need all the other things done right, the technical, the off-page, the user experience, to make sure your blog content and your on-page content ranks well. If you've got a slow site, your content probably won't rank. If you've got a slow site with no internal links from other pages that you can sort of find this page, you probably won't rank. If you've got a page with loads of toxic backlinks that's slow, that doesn't have any good internal links that point to this particular page, doesn't have an engaging readability, has small text, has no images, has no videos, has no animations, hasn't considered the actual reading of the page themselves, it won't rank. So there's a lot of things that go on page SEO, and they all come back around into sort of one big circle. More importantly, the best thing to do is have a look at other blog pages out there that you like in any sector. I think, why do you like those things? And if what you're being produced or what someone's going to be producing for you doesn't match up into the same aesthetic, the same experience, then all you're getting is you're getting some cheap writing. And you know, you ultimately pay for what you get. And that's as well with the SEO and the on-page aspect to it as well. It's not just words. It's about keyword research as well. So you can find someone on Fiverr who can write your blog for $30, $20. But actually what you need is someone to do the keyword research to make sure that content isn't already present on your site in some form. So you're not cannibalizing it and missing the chance to rank on either one. You need to make sure that the images are good, it's published correctly, it's compressed. There's a ton of stuff going on. The images, the file names have been named correctly. The alt tags have been added correctly with the right keywords. You're adding the keywords you're using on this page to a spreadsheet, so anyone else who takes over after can make sure it's not duplicating the same keyword density. There's a ton of things involved, but all this goes into SEO. Again, it's not about just writing one blog post, updating a few meta titles. So let's get to that final bit, meta titles. I keep nailing them. Meta titles are those things, you'll see them if you use Yoast or Rank Math on WordPress, you'll have the option of adding a title and a description that goes out for SEO purposes. It's not, it's click-through rate optimization, and on Shopify it has it at the bottom of products and the pages. Now, those are the things that appear in the Google SERP, the sort of search engine ranking page, sort of, they're your kind of advert. They're essentially your AdWords in the organic. How you write those can affect whether or not someone clicks on your listing. And if more people click on yours than say the one above it, the chances are you can get a lift. But it's not because you're more SEO'd, it's essentially because it's more compelling and it's more click-through rate optimized. So have a think about the word you use. Again, obviously use the words that match the search user's intent. If you're writing a guide to the best, fake fur mitts in the UK 2020, then obviously your title and your meta title, you do want it to match up to that. So people who are looking for those things will say, hey, you know, that's what I want. But also make it fun, make it engaging, make yours stand out better than the other ones on there. How do you do that? Have a look at what's already up there. See what they're doing wrong. Some of them have got titles that are too long and they truncate off because they haven't removed their company name off the end, which is a basic mistake a lot do. And then again, looking at the actual description underneath it. What are you saying in there? What are you telling people to come onto your page for? If it's a product, why not put a discount code in there? So there's a ton of reasons beyond SEO that meta titles and meta descriptions offer value, but they are more than just SEO. They're actually more about click-through rate optimization. They are the cherry on top. But ultimately, if your content, your page speed, your page load, duplicate content, all that other nonsense, if that's not there, you're never going to be in the index anyways for people to actually then decide whether or not to click on you. So that is what goes into SEO. It's an intense process. It's a long-term process. But here's a statistic to get you kind of moist. Every pound invested in Google Ads brings back a net profit of a pound. Now, that's an average figure from Google AdWords themselves from 2020. However, do bear in mind, most of the ad spend in the world is done by a smaller number of companies, massive companies. These companies have got expert content creators, they've got strategists, they've got videographers, designers, they've got the lot. Ultimately, their office is optimized to get results from AdWords. The reality is most small businesses struggle. When you stop running ads, you stop getting clicks. So it's £1 to £1. SEO invested in the long term, let's say 1 year, for every pound you invest, if you do it for a year, that pound yields on average a £2.50 profit on top of every pound. But here's the extra benefit. Look at the 3 year period, that £1 you invested at day one has yielded you £3.50 on top. So there's actually, £4.50. So there's actually, for every £1 you invested that you did at the very first day, it brought you £4.50 over 3 years. And that's because great content, once it ranks, once you keep updating it a little bit every so often, will continue to rank by and large and keep bringing you organic traffic. I've got blog posts that I might have paid £30, £40, £50 for, and I've done 10 of them in one big block. 9 of them will have done nothing. 1 of them will have yielded me thousands and thousands and thousands of clicks over the last 2 or 3 years, costing me on total, if I include the cost of all the other ones, about a penny, 2p a click. So that's one of the beauties of organic marketing, is the fact that when you stop doing the SEO, you don't suddenly stop losing the clicks and losing the hits. And for me, when I look at blog posts that I posted a year ago that in the last year produced me 4,000 clicks on that blog post, which isn't huge numbers in the whole scheme of things, but that's not bad return on the cost of that blog, which might have been, say, £40 or £50. We're talking, you know, pennies. I mentioned as well, I might have done one post in a block of 10. 8 or 9 of them may not have got much traffic. Now, that's not a total failure. Sometimes you have to do all those other bits of blog content around it to create the depth of content. And when Google crawls your site, it goes, hey, you know what? This site has got lots of internally linked and grouped together content all about plastic-free sports shoes. That means when you then do your really good post with a good bit of search volume and a low keyword difficulty, and all the other ones are pointing to that particular page, you're more likely to rank because you've got a deep body of content around it. So sometimes you have to do 6, 7, 8 other blog posts around one blog post just to make one blog post work well. It's called shoulder, and there's a ton of phrases for it, clusters and silos. But ultimately, done right, the long-term return on SEO is very, very, very cost effective. Anyway, that's what you should be looking for when you recruit for an SEO company. The whole gambit, the whole thing. Notice how I didn't really mention things like social signals, knocking up 300 blog posts, buying backlinks. With buying backlinks, everyone buys in some way or another. If you're paying a PR company to go out there and turn some favors to get you in there, you paid for it. What I'm trying to get people away from is the idea that there is a SEO quick rich scheme. That doesn't exist. People want to tell you there is. They can tell you they're going to rank you on page one. Well, I could rank anyone on page one, but let me pick the keyword. And the reality is I could get you to rank on page one for a keyword that no one else is searching for. It's about relevant search terms. There's a lot that goes into SEO. I hope I've helped you kind of open your mind up a little bit and consider some ideas of what you want to be looking for when someone pitches you for the services next. It's really hard to know what to do when you've never done it before. So anyway, there you go. That's Death Grounds Mob Show. That's how to recruit for an SEO. There's a ton of stuff involved. And if I've given you a little bit of guidance, I've done my job. Thanks for listening.
Hi, guys. Welcome to Death Grounds Podcast. So this week, I'm going to talk to you about Fiverr. Now, Fiverr is a platform I've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with over the years. Obviously, running my own business, you always try and find sort of freelancing platforms, places where you can get short-term work done. And I'll be honest with you, historically, I've never had much luck with it. I've had pretty much only poor results. And I've tried other freelancing platforms. I've tried things like People Per Hour. I've tried Upwork, Join2 or something, Join2Hire. I don't know. There's a few of them out there. And some of them I found some good people. Some of them I found good people in certain sectors. So, for example, I use StoreTasker a lot if it comes to trying to find a Shopify developer. I've used People Per Hour to find a developer, but it's hit and miss. The prices are hit and miss. It's not always there. I do hate, to some degree, having to communicate through the apps, but that is the case for all of them, and I understand why. It's to protect their revenue and the work they're doing as the companies. But I've had historically bad experiences. So lockdown happened, and I thought, what am I going to do with my spare time? And one of the things I've realized is I've probably learned an awful lot more about search engine optimization and just general marketing promotion, conversion rate, all that other kind of stuff that goes in with e-commerce than half the people I've, more than half the people, 99% of the people that I've ever looked at using for my own business. But there's one person I use when it comes to SEO. He's phenomenal. Whenever I have a problem, I Google that problem, and his answers always come up because it's just that high level. He's fantastic, and he's a secret. But anyway, moving on from that, in nearly every other case, there's just nothing that I'm learning new. I thought, well, do you know what? I probably could offer a very simple service on Fiverr, and is it going to work? Who knows? And so from me having the perspective of thinking, oh, Fiverr's full of rubbish, I thought, you know what? I'm sure there is good quality on there, and I'm gonna try and be some of that good. I'm sure there is good quality on there, and I'm gonna try and be some of that good quality as like the guardian angel to some of the simple SEO tasks out there, and try and make things a little bit easier. So that's what I did. I started it in August, so it was quite late into the lockdown. Thought about it for a while, didn't do it. Thought about it for more, didn't do it. Still thought about, still didn't do it. August. I finally registered an account. And what puts me off a lot of these freelancing platforms is there's no integration. So they're not integrated with one another. You've got to essentially build a profile on every single one, which is a lot of work. So I thought, I'm going to pick one. I'm going to pick one that's quite simple. I'm going to pick one that I quite like the user experience. People Per Hour annoys me where it's got the work stream and the messages and the notices, and it just doesn't seem to work as slick as I like. Upwork is a bit more involved. There's a lot of bidding. You have to go out there and bid in for the jobs. And I just thought, I want to put something up there. And if I can tweak it and use all the skills that I've learned in terms of making things stand out, good calls to action, maybe I can test my own skills in just putting the gig up there. So that's what I did. Set it up. I set up a couple of gigs. The primary one was SEO keyword research. So anyone out there who's looking for an understanding of not just words that a page has got to rank for or got to target for, words that they actually could target for. I've used these gigs in the past. They give you a spreadsheet full of data. There's very little to go with it. And that's fair enough. That's all you're paying for is just some data. But I didn't know what to do with them. And so you think, do I put them all on one page? Do I put some of them on one page? And what I've also noticed now, looking back over this work, is very often you'd get junior keywords. And junior keywords, without boring you on this podcast, are words really, but although they are keywords, they're actually part of a bigger phrase. And if you were to use a bunch of different junior keywords, you might actually be cannibalizing. That means creating content that essentially ranks for the same main term. So that's no good. And no one ever told me that. No one ever points that out in some of these keyword gigs. So I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to pitch. I'm going to give you 100 keywords for $5. I'm going to pitch you 5 key topics that you should be creating on your site, perfectly targeted for you, bespoke for you. So I'm going to spend a bit longer. So you're going to get 5 keywords and 5 general topics. But the chances of you ranking for them are a lot higher. They're parent topics, so there's going to be no cannibalization. And I'm going to probably give you some ideas of how to use those words as well on that page, maybe with some sort of subheadings to go with it. And that was it. Quality work rather than quantity work. And I priced it for, like $10 or $15 when I first started. Just put that up there and made an image on Canva. Where am I now? So it's now December and I've had sales and I've changed some of the images and changed some of the graphics. But it's proven effective. I was actually going to save this to the end of the podcast and talk about where I am now. So where am I now? Okay. In 14 days, I'll be a level 2 seller. So I've gone from, they have their own rating levels. So you go from 0 to level 1 to level 2. And above that is a manually curated section called top rated sellers. And you've got to do quite a high level of business for it. There's a much higher barrier for entry. And even still, there's no guarantee you'll get it. So you could be a level 2 seller for 5 years, do roaring trade, have good reviews, and still never become a top rated seller. Well, that is. I suppose that's the way they want to keep the quality. It's fair enough. But level 2 seller is the highest level you can get automatically. And so you have to achieve a number of goals. That means communication response time is good. You have you only have above 90% response rate, completion rates, feedback, positive, 5-star feedback. And where am I now? Well, I've now done about 60 gigs. I have 35-star reviews on my SEO keyword. Well, I've got a number of other reviews and other ones. I have about 85% 5-star review rate. The rest of them, people haven't left reviews, or they might be duplicate gigs where they've done another one and they thought, oh, I've already reviewed you. So I'm pleased with that. And warnings. I thought I was going to get a warning, and you can get held back for warnings. And I've been able to increase my prices every so often as well, as the number of reviews go up. The more I've increased them because I've got more kind of collateral behind that particular gig. And at level 2, I'll probably move them up a few pounds, a couple of pounds more, to make it worth my while. Ultimately, you are going to start off at a level that's very, very cheap for what you do, but you need to get the reviews in, and those reviews are worth money in the bank. That's the way I look at it. So there's always a lot of talk about Fiverr. Can you compete with people because of pricing? How can you compete with someone who offers work for really cheap, and invariably the work they're offering is poor. And if they are offering amazing work at a very cheap price, the reality is they're not going to be doing it for very long and doing it as part of an agenda to grow their ranking, which is what I've been doing. I've had reviews where people have said he's over delivering. Of course I'm over delivering. I want to get to level 2. I want tons of amazing 5-star reviews that clearly aren't spam. So when people then approach my gig in a few months' time and they go, oh, why is yours like 3 times the price of the others? Because I've got 10 times the skill level as they have. So you're still in profit. Anyway, so if you are thinking about doing it yourself, and to give you some idea, it's taken me, I didn't get many gigs in the first month. I didn't do anything called buyer's request where you can go out there and you can pitch people, but invariably those people are lunatics and you don't want to be pitching for that work. You just need to make sure that your gig is worded correctly, presented in the best way possible, and you pre-handle any thoughts that someone might have if they do click on your page as to, why has this person got no reviews? Why is this person only a level 0? You have to pre-handle those things, and then you, if you handle that well, I suppose, then particularly if you're doing like a writing gig or a design gig, and you can utilize some of your example work within your gallery, then you can generally tackle that. Providing you're online, providing your good customer service, you can get business quickly. I see a lot of people struggling. They go, I can't get any gigs. You can't get any orders, sorry, for their gigs. You look at their gigs and they look awful. So first of all, let's talk about, if you're going to do this, what kind of gig you're going to do yourself. Well, look, there's a customer for everyone. And you undoubtedly probably have a skill that someone would pay you for. Do you have something that you can do in a few minutes that is a lifesaver for someone else? So do you think about something like an electrician, for example? Obviously, you're not going to do this on Fiverr, but some people can't change a plug. And we'd probably pay someone, you know, 10, 15 quid to do it, 20 quid just to change a plug head, to rather than getting a whole new kettle or a whole new piece of equipment. And if it was just a mate's rate or just a handyman who's driving around doing them, it'd take him a few minutes, he'd happily do that. Now, he wouldn't obviously take the time out of day to do a full pass of an electrical job just to do your plug, but you get the point. Is using an analogy, there are skills we've all got inherently. It could be setting up a PlayStation for your online gaming, it could be whatever it is. There are inherent skills we all have, maybe making a bunch of nice Instagram canvas posts or whatever, and there'll be people out there that you're going to be saving them time. So there's essentially a number of different reasons why people are going to use a platform like Fiverr. They're going to use it because they can't do something. They're going to use it because they can do something, they just need something done cheap, they don't care massively about the quality, they just need to pack something out, new websites or something like that. Or they can do something, they can do it quite well, they'll pay a bit more money, but you're just saving them time. So they have a high standard, but they will pay more. And often they'll ignore the cheap gigs to look for the higher quality ones. And you get others who may meet any of those criteria and just happen to shop always expensive. And of course you're going to get buyers who want expense, you want quality and will only pay cheap. And those people you want to avoid. You seriously want to avoid them. You're hiding to nothing. So, and that's one of the advantages I found is I've gone on, I've increased my prices and I've got more positive reviews, I've gone more depth. And I can get a feel of someone if they message me beforehand. If I think they're a bit of a dick, I will just say, look, I'd love to help you, but I'm actually really busy right now. So, and that's not an area I'm great at. So, best off using someone else, and then I just block them. Don't want them ordering from me. I don't want to get no amount of money is worth a 1-star review because someone's an arsehole. But essentially, there is a gig out there for everyone. Now, one of the tricks people use is they'll go on there and they'll see where the demand is. Now, where a lot of the demand is around things like design, people design, writing's another one, voiceovers, translations. Maybe you could do a great voiceover. Maybe you could help edit someone's audio. Maybe you could help edit some images or edit some videos. There's a number of different things. So having a browse of sites like this and having an understanding whether or not you have something that fits within a popular category, lots of reviews and the bestseller, that kind of thing, that tells you something. Now, obviously, there'll be certain areas where you'll feel that it's just not worth your time. There's no money in it. And you may feel like that way at first, but you will eventually find there are people out there who look for quality over just price. And if you go for the price aspect, then, of course, you're going to be fighting against some of the worst freelancers on there and the new ones who are great who are just doing a price. So that's really for you to play around with. But I always look at it, you know, the first couple of months, it's an investment in your profile. So if you don't make much money on them, if it's spare time you had anyway, if it's going to get you a 5-star review, it's going to help you either you could use your profile on Fiverr for your own personal freelance business offline, couldn't you? You could say, hey, you know what? You want to see some of my work? Check out my Fiverr profile. Go on there. Now, some people might not want to do that. What if they want to order from me from Fiverr? Then you lose a big percentage. Yeah, but you're also guaranteed to get paid, and it's pretty slick. What if they find someone else? Well, then get better. Shouldn't be worried about that. So that's where you go for with gigs. For me, it was pretty straightforward. I knew that one of the things I saw very often when people were giving bad keyword research advice, I'd see a lot of cannibalization on new sites. What else do I offer? I do things like user experience audits, and I really enjoy these because these are a bit more meaty. So I have a look at someone's website and I essentially roast them. I give them sort of a 15 to 30 page document where I just tear them a new one and tell them how bad their website is and what they can do to fix it. I then talk about the page speed aspects. A lot of people download an app also, particularly on Shopify, to try and improve their speed. But really all that does is it just loads up the speed for the user who's either already been to your site, so it's already been kind of cached, or there are multiple pages. It doesn't really generally help your first page, which is what Google's ranking. So that's some of the things that I have a good in-depth knowledge of, because I'm a bit of a speed freak when it comes to our own Shopify stores. So I help people with that, how to improve their page performance. Things just generally around improving the function of their shop. Looking at some of their, you know, do they have an obtrusive interstitial? So what that means is as soon as you land on a website, if a pop-up meets you straight away, that's an obtrusive interstitial. That's just what it's called. It's and I said to one earlier on, so you're speaking to a client, and I said, look, I said, get rid of the pop-up, put it on the second page if someone lands on. Don't do it on the first page. He was like, oh, but I've seen a couple of the other competitors do it. I said, do you like pop-ups? He went, no. So that's your answer. Just not to say don't ever use pop-ups. I just think so many people get these new websites off of Shopify or set up, and they just use the formulaic process. They all look the same. I said to another guy yesterday, I said, is your site a dropshipping site? He went, was it that obvious? I said, yeah, for three reasons. I said, one, you've got a currency box on your bottom of your footer, as if you're trying to sell it to the whole world. Two, you've got all of your products in the world on your homepage, which a big retailer doesn't do that, because it's a waste of SEO. So you've not had anyone do technical SEO for you. And three, you're expecting results in 3 days. That level of pace and expectation tells me you've got no retail experience. And as such, strikes me as you're a dropshipper. So he's cool with it, and I'm helping him out. But anyway, so that's in a nutshell the kind of people you're going to come across. And I don't know how I managed to get off on a tangent there, but that was my gig. So I do like user experience. I help people find better ways to sell their products. I have a look at their site and I just say, look, you know what? People aren't going to buy these products from you in the way it's done. That's it. And then I look at the technical SEO, give them the feedback of the experience I've had, and they can use it as sort of an action plan. So for me, it was very natural. For you, you'll find your own thing. You'll have your own area and you'll get better at it. The first gig you put out is going to be terrible. The first description you use is going to be terrible. The first banner image you use, probably going to be terrible. You're going to be priced wrong. You're going to be using the wrong keywords. It's going to be an absolute shower. But was it great as the enemy of good? Is that what I always say? Someone else already says? Who knows? But you've just got to give it a try. So when you set up your gig, what can you do to try and make it found? How do you get found? Okay, well, there's a number of things. Fiverr recommends you promote on social media. Personally, unless I'm going to get paid for bringing a customer to their platform, I don't do that. And also, I find it a bit embarrassing. You know, this is my little private space. I don't want to guilt people who know me to use my services. And I know there's a ton of people out there who say, you're crazy, that's mad. How can you be offering that as advice? That's just me personally. Yes, if you can get investment for your business from friends and family, amazing. If you can get jobs from your friends and family, amazing. If you can get, you know, whatever. Fair play to you, all power to you. For me, I like to keep my family and my friends as one little unique space. I've made the mistake of employing friends, and it just causes issues and it does damage to friendships temporarily, and I don't like that. I've got a really good friend, love the boy, like my little brother, and he worked with me for a temporary period of time. And I actually felt bad after a while when he was working for me, because I felt like he'd become a bit comfortable working with me, and that isn't where his skills lie. And so one day I said, look, I don't want you doing this anymore. I want you to be my friend again. Not that he wasn't my friend, but I wanted that to be the situation. And he's doing what he enjoys doing now. And that was the worst thing I could see. He was doing something that was just way below his skill station, and finally starting to do the things he likes doing, which is great. And that's helping more people than he'd ever be helping doing bits and bobs for me. But anyway, so I'm not going to share it on social media. No chance, and you've got to pay me to do that as well. So and then everyone goes on and they take that advice and they just spam it as if they're going to get some ranking boost by doing it on Fiverr. Like, well done for doing a post. Here's an extra few spaces up the rankings ladder. Doesn't work that way. They're just saying find your own customers. Don't rely on the platform. It's the same with crowdfunding sites. If you know, when you try and launch a crowdfund on a crowdfunding site, as you would do that normally, they'll always tell you to promote it off the platform. There's two reasons they're doing that. One, because they can't guarantee they're going to raise you the money off their own client base. And two, they want you to bring them new clients. Makes sense, really, doesn't it? It's a win-win for them. It's not a great win for you. Unless, of course, it works. So how do I get my gigs? Get my gigs from the platform. I'm not in a hurry. For me, it's a bit of a side thing. It's a bit of a hobby time. My wife's an early go-to-bedder. That's a phrase. And so in my evening from sort of 9 till midnight, I'm like, well, what do I do? Well, you know, I can watch Netflix. Stroke a cat, you know,
play on the internet, or I could sell those hours that were otherwise going for nothing. So that's what I do. And then I've got my weekends. So I've got time that I can sell, and I can use that for something. In fact, we're going away in January earlier this year, and you know, I'm going to be using the money I've made from my Fiverr to pay for that, which is great. So it's like the first holiday we've had in ages, and it's been paid for by work that I generated from the time that would just be sat on the sofa. So it's like a free holiday. So how do I promote? I promote using the platform, and they work like any other search engine. They work by using SEO, I suppose, really. That's it in a nutshell. Making sure there is a common relevance for what you're trying to sell within your topic. So what I mean by that is, say, for example, you're trying to sell online dancing lessons, maybe. Maybe you do online one-to-one dancing lessons. If your title, you know, that's the top thing, if that's got it in there, if it's got it written within the description, in naturally written as well, naturally written, not like, get your online dancing lessons from our online dancing lesson course using our online dancing lesson training, only available through this professional online dancing trainer. That's spammy and you're not going to help you. But if you talk about, you know, like we provide online dancing training online. Find, you know, if you want to find out more about how our online tutorials can help your, you know, dancing either remotely or, you know, whatever. Just trying to weave it in much more naturally so it's got readability. A lot of these search algorithms on every platform out there worth their salt have a readability factor as well. They can spot bad writings. Quite an easy thing for them to do. Yoast has it on the Yoast plugin for WordPress. You'll see there's that Fleisch score. And everyone has to try and navigate it. And they've got no idea what a Fleisch score is. And they get frustrated and Google, what is Fleisch score? But in a nutshell, it's quite an easy thing for them to build into their code, readability. So weaving that in naturally, using related topics online. So rhythm and movement. Consultant, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of other phrases. I'm clearly know nothing about dancing. I know a bit about dancing, dancing training, but so weaving in maybe types of dancing, things that thesauruses and algorithms can look at, and they go, oh, okay, they're semantically related, they're topically related, so it shows the relevance of your page. And then you get the options of FAQs, so you can say, you know, why my online dancing training haven't got many reviews, why me, read this first. Those kind of things, very clickbaity, but pre-handling the questions they're going to ask. If you're brand new and you say, look, wait, I know I don't have many reviews to read this. People generally going to read it. If they're looking at your profile and they're not going for it, it's going to be one of a few reasons. Price, not clear what you're doing, not clear that you know what you're doing. I'm doing this on the fly here. And before something more compelling's come up, you know. So if it's just four things, and price and not sure what you know what you're doing, or reviews and things like that is makes up half of those. Having something that says, like, wait, hold up, I know you're thinking you haven't got many reviews. Let me explain. I don't have many reviews on Fiverr. I've only been doing it for 3 weeks, but I have 7 years experience in doing dancing training, from training at RADA or whatever it's called. Here's a link to my portfolio. Here's my YouTube, whatever it is, and however you can do it. Because there's certain things Fiverr get funny with you in bed. Or you can say, look, just ask me for my portfolio link. Don't turn up this opportunity because I haven't got many reviews on Fiverr. I joined in December 2020, but I could verifiably prove. And I've done that across all my gigs. Now I had to go back over and say I don't have many reviews because it used to be I don't have any reviews. And it worked. So that's Heyder. So and then you've also got tags. So you get to put sort of these little tags in there. You see them on the bottom of YouTube, if you ever added a YouTube thing, or any CMS manager for a website generally lets you add a tag. So you can find the right tags for what you want to do by literally Googling, going on Fiverring, by literally Fiverring the kind of course or the topic that you're looking to offer. Click on the top listings by best-selling or by rating. Scroll to the bottom and you'll see the tags they use. Use those tags. But actually, before you do that, check a few of them. Check the top three. What's the commonality between all of them? Use those ones. Are they using any tags that clearly aren't relevant to it because they have another skill they're doing it as well? We'll bin those ones off. Just focus on the topic at hand, the task at hand. You can upload your own images again. So you can, very much like Google, I would imagine if you name the file name based on the thing you're offering, again, that's going to help you. And then also you move on to things like price, obviously can affect where you appear, reviews. There's one other thing as well that can affect where you appear, and that has completely escaped me while I'm doing this podcast. So I kind of have some bullet points. This is the thing. So if you hear a squeaky noise, my wife shoved the bed in my study to try and make it a more usable room. So now I have this tiny little desk, and she's got a mirror on the bed, which I don't know why she's put a mirror on the bed. She uses this bed sometimes, so you tell me. But it makes a squeaky noise. So there you go. Sounds like I'm on a trampoline. Right, here's the other thing. Your banner image is so important. If you've ever gone through Vape Run, so I'm doing a podcast, right? And I'm doing it from my phone, so I'm recording this podcast. And I have a business called Vape Run. And Vape Run, there's a web chat's just appeared, so I've just said the name of the business. So if you're ever doing, if you ever go through Fiverr and the life and trials of someone with multiple businesses. So if you ever go through Fiverr and you look for a topic, so say you're looking for, I don't know, graphic design. Have a look at something. Obviously, for graphic design, you'd expect the banners of people's gigs to look nice. But it's the same as YouTube. It's the same as anything. This is the advert. And if the advert looks like it's been written by a five-year-old that's never seen a graphic design application before, you're probably not going to get many clicks. But if you use some of the main compelling factors that any advertiser or marketer out there knows work, such as human beings, the human beings doing the gig, looking out of the the image, making sure the text is viewable enough when it's made onto a small mobile screen, making sure there's compelling things. Like I have one that says click me, and it just those classic things work. And so I have a high open rate for my gigs because, of course, I am fortunately married to a designer. And likewise, once you're into my gigs, we've gone to the effort of having a look at what the videos people have used on their gigs for their five gigs to promote their gigs. And we've gone, you know what? We're going to make them better, and we've made them better. And so having all those factors and spending that time to do that competitor research has helped. It's meant, yes, I don't have as many reviews. I'm not always going to appear there, number one best reviews. But when people do come across me, my gig's going to stand out. And if my gig's at the bottom near some of the other absolute chaff because, you know, they haven't got many reviews either, mine's going to look like an absolute diamond in the rough. So it stands out in its own kind of way. And it's why I'm probably getting gigs come through. In fact, I kept increasing my prices because I had too much work coming through and I was like, it's actually not fun anymore. So that's how you promote. That's how I promote. I promote by seeing what's working for others, looking at it and going, how can I improve it? And that's the secret with anything, isn't it? It's the same with when you do trying to improve your website, you're trying to improve your business. Go and have a look at the competitors. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. They've done it to you. They're doing it to you. I see it all the time. You know, I have blog posts that rank well, and all of a sudden, the biggest competitor in the industry suddenly produced a blog post for it because they've got a good team who are doing that. They're researching them. So do your analysis. Use the word analysis. And look at them. What are they doing? Have a look at them. Imagine you're a customer. Do you like it? What's rubbish? Always think what's rubbish. What could you do better? And then make sure that you have the same eye for detail when you do your own one. Using the right tags, seeing what's popular out there. Now, that's how I promote. So now let's talk about how to price it. How do you price it? Well, as I said, look, the price you're going to do on day one is probably not going to be the same price you have on day 100. Why is that? Well, you'll have a lot more reviews. Once you start getting more reviews, you're going to rank higher anyway naturally. You're going to get more custom and more clicks through, providing your gig looks good and you keep it fresh. So I would say the first instance, worry about not commit yourself to too much for too little. And everyone has this impression of how much they think they're worth. And that's great. But you've got no reviews and you're no one. So imagine Fiverr as a whole new world. Imagine people per hour as a whole new world. What you think you deserve to earn on planet Earth isn't what you think you deserve to, or isn't really what you deserve to earn on planet freelancing platform. It's a whole new world. Rules are off the table. You're a no one. So what would you do to get some opportunity? Now, what would you do to have an opportunity if you wanted to work in marketing and you wanted to work for a major, major brand? You know how hard it is to crack in. Would you intern for just expenses for like Saatchi or Ogilvy? Of course you would, unless you would tilt your own backside. You'd go out there and you would see how you could make it possible. When I worked in finance in the city, I used to send out these little coupons. I was a coupon boy. It was barely enough to get the train fare in. What else am I going to do with those years? I could go and do an apprenticeship somewhere, yeah, and I could be on good money doing that. But if I wanted to do something that could earn me six-figure salary at a very young age, you take a punt. And that's what it is. So I'd say the same. Underprice yourself, but over-deliver. But don't do it for long. Get those first reviews on the board and just start to ratchet up, grow, you know, slowly, slowly. couple of dollars here, couple of dollars there. You know, if you get a gig that you don't like doing, you realize you don't like doing it, because you might have a few gigs by now. Time's ticked by, grown a beard, we've all moved on, you've got a few gigs. If you've got a few gigs you don't like doing them, just put a one in front of the number. That's what I did. Like, I still get contacts for it. And so while, yeah, I may have sold with that particular gig, you know, four or five a month, now I'll only sell one a month, but I'm earning the same money, so what does it matter? And that is probably the main thing. Forget what you think you're worth and actually price what you value getting a five-star review, getting lots of five-star reviews. Once you've got lots of five-star reviews and you're a level two seller and you've done it in a quick space of time because you've taken that gamble, you're pretty much top of the heap other than the top-rated sellers or someone with more reviews than you. You start charging what you want to charge for. You know, invest in that gig. So, you know, if you want to do better quality videos, better quality graphics, if you invest those assets into your gig sort of description and how it sells, you can charge more because it creates a bigger, better presence of what you're doing. So that's really important. And also, you eventually start to learn how much more time you can devote or how much more time you'd like to devote. So I do a gig right now for keyword research. It's 5 words, a very basic gig. I give them some supplementary topics as well. I don't give them any action plan. I don't really give them any SEO guidance other than just that and a short video explaining why I picked those words and how they can implement them. That's it, which is already, you know, pretty good value. And that's about $25. It takes me about an hour. And that's still too cheap for my time. And I know that, but I'm trying to get these reviews up. What I'd like to do is to, and that's with the video, I don't promise. The video is something that I do if I get a chance to. If it happens to a gig to fall in where I've got nothing else on that day, do it. So I would like to be able to offer that video as a standard. I'd like to be able to, send them over a quick written report as well. But those things take time. Not everyone necessarily wants that, or not everyone's prepared to pay for it. But I know that there is a gig there in that. You know, rather than me charging $25 just for the words, I'd like to charge $35, $40. And I know then I can get all that work done within an hour. And I've got a really good hourly wage. And then I've got a really good hourly wage. So that's something that I'm interested in doing. And that's kind of how you start to play with some of the prices. But eventually, in the first instance, you want to underprice yourself and overdeliver. Why? You want the reviews. Once you get the reviews, you can start naming prices a lot more. Still be sensible, but you definitely have a lot more control over it. So yeah, it's hardship for a little while, but if it's just a side earner, you're just selling time that you're going to get paid nothing for anyway, get your head out your backside, and there's opportunities there. So I said to you, I was going to talk to you about where I am now. So where am I at now? So I've done over 50 gigs in those couple of months. This month, I think I've done about $2,000 from Fiverr alone. It's just a month gone. So not tons of money. But you know what? These are my evenings. This time that I was doing nothing else with. So imagine you could get an extra $24,000 a year. And I say dollars because it's all in dollars. I always cringe at people say who are British. Okay, imagine you get an extra 15, 16 grand a year just from devoting the time that you spend on Netflix to something like Fiverr. And the reality is next month or the month after, it won't be $2,000. It'll be $2,500. It'll be $3,000. When you get to level two, you can start using promoted gigs. So what I would do is I would increase the price of some of my gigs a touch just to cover the cost of acquisition. Then I can get more gigs in those times. So there'll be no dead periods. So essentially, I'm getting in a position where I'm going to be able to build a full-time salary from this. It's a gamble with Fiverr because you don't know if it's going to cut you off. So for me, it's still going to remain being a side earner, but I'm going to try and make sure it brings in almost a salary's worth of revenue. And I think that's what I've got out of it. And I think it's been a really great experience. There's some really dick stuff about the platform, but if you want to, there's some dick stuff about the platform, but if you want an opportunity to earn some more money with your dead time, it's not too late for Fiverr. And that's it. That's the podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Mason on Business. This is the Death Ground Podcast.